Welcome to Law Subscribed. This is your dedicated news source for all things subscriptions in the law. My name is Matthew Kurbis. I'm the subscription attorney, and I believe subscriptions can help bridge the access to justice gap and incentivize attorneys to modernize and scale their practice like never before. On this show, I interview lawyers ditching the billable hour and experts who can help attorneys move beyond billing time. Thanks to my sponsors, 650 and Gavel, links to both in the show notes, more on them later, and use the code LAWSUBSCRIBED when signing up. You get 10% off, and it supports the show. The best way to support the show is to share it with someone you know. This podcast is for educational and entertainment purposes only, and nothing said is legal, ethical, or financial advice. Without further delay, here's the episode. My name is Matthew Kurbis. I'm the subscription attorney, and I want to welcome a very special guest and also be a guest for the tech-savvy lawyer himself, Michael DJ Eisenberg. Welcome to the show, and also pleasure to be here.
And as I thank you for the introduction, and it is, of course, a pleasure to be here as well. I am Michael DJ Eisenberg. I am the podcaster and host of the TechSavvyLawyer.page and the TechSavvyLawyer.page podcast. And I'm thrilled to have with me the most recent Keen Award recipient, Matthew Kurbis of Law Subscribed podcast.
Happy to be here.
I'm thrilled to have you here, and I'm thrilled that you and I can get together and sort of do a little bit of meshing of thoughts and impressions that we have from the ABA Tech Show 2024 Chicago. And do you know that next year's conference will be in Chicago, but at a different hotel? And it will be in April, not February. So April 2nd through the 5th. Make sure you put that in your calendars. But before we get into all that kind of stuff, Matt, tell me, what did you think of the tech show?
I had an absolute blast. I mean, this year was tech show brought to you by AI. Appropriately.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Even in the podcasting for lawyers talk that I talked about, we decided to add AI into the title just to make
you
sure
have
people
to.
Knew.
You have
yes,
to.
This includes AI, too. Please come.
We are two podcasters, and I went to a podcasting conference, and a huge part of the conference was about using AI to help you in the development and the maintaining of your podcast. And so it is becoming a big thing across the board, regardless of what profession you're in. Whether it's legal, podcasting, entertainment, writing, the list goes on.
Yeah.
So what did you think was the most important lesson to have been learned about AI in the legal field?
I think AI should not all be treated equally. I think the third place winner of Startup Alley, which I'd love to get your input on too, you thought about the startup competition folks.
Yeah.
Third place winner was Paxton AI. I do use Paxton. Okay. I've had them on the podcast, but something they talked about in their presentation and their pitch at Tech Show, I think is something that needs to be highlighted for folks. And that is a lot of these AI companies or companies using AI, they're not using proprietary large language models. They're using an API with OpenAI for ChatGPT or GPT-4 or Turbo.
All right.
They're using it. And so this is also known in the space as an AI wrapper or GPT wrapper, where the company is wrapped around it. And certain ones of them, I was asking them about this on the show floor. They could plug and play different LLMs, right? Like they could use Llama 2. They could plug in Anthropic's Claude and some other ones, but they're heavily reliant on other LLMs. Well, what Paxton is doing, which I think is really interesting, and I wonder if we're going to see more of this, is they have their own large language model that they're training, and they're calling it a legal language model.
Okay. Right?
Like a legal large language model. Focus specifically on the legal profession. And I think they're pioneering in that space. And I think that's a big takeaway is I think that's how they're going to, like, that's how you distinguish yourself in this AI, everything is AI space, is you're making your own large language model. It's really incredible.
I think that Paxton Legal AI had a very good presentation and they definitely deserve to be in the top three. But from my perspective, and again, this is not to poo-poo on Paxton AI or any of the other contestants, is that they are sort of all the same but different. And each one is providing their own unique utility. Some of them will kind of bleed over to the other, which is fine. For me personally, I thought Resolution should have won because it offers a conflict resolution service that allows the two parties to sort of hammer it out together using AI to help them mediate. And what I liked about that is it provides an access to justice element to it. So all these others, or many of the others, are helping you digest information and regurgitating it in different ways that are useful for lawyers. Resolution is actually trying to provide a service to help the process of law, I think, in a different way. Now, mind you, of course, when you're getting a lot of large pieces of information and you need to sort out complex stuff, all these others, including Paxton AI, are developing AI programs, processes, services to assist lawyers and the public. But I think that resolution was what I saw as being unique, and also with the bent on being more access to justice friendly.
I think that's a great point to highlight. And also, they may not have won the pitch competition, but what's nice about Tech Show is we win as lawyers. And so we still get to, even though they didn't win, they still got highlighted in Startup Alley.
Definitely. Definitely. Yeah. And I will be reaching out to them amongst many of the other contestants, both winners and non-winners, to have them as guests, because I think that a lot of them offered some really unique ways of utilizing AI and tech to help basically improve their practice by streamlining their processes.
But the winner, I think I want to say, because it's also related to the pod, the theme of my podcast, Altfee. A tool that doesn't even use AI in any way won the pitch competition at Tech Show brought to you by AI. So what an amazing outcome, right? I guess it tells you people hate the attorneys hate the billable hour. They want another way.
Yeah. But then you got to wonder, think we have the billable hour, and I think I'm a couple of years older than you, and I mean that in a nice way. And because of that, if we were to look at sort of like the Equal Access to Justice Act fees, that my billable hour is probably a little bit higher than yours. And I'm basing it just based on time of out of law school, that kind of bit, not because one's better than the other. And if we're going to start doing it more per project and less per hour, you got to wonder how much that fee is still going to be, because you're using that expertise to manipulate and handle the AI and the computer data and whatnot in order to get a product out. Well, people say, well, I could do that for free, but could you? Could you do, with the requisite knowledge that we have as attorneys, compartmentalize everything down and get it regurgitated out, say in 5 minutes, which would normally take 5 hours? Do I then charge 5 hours worth of my billable time because of my expertise? Or is there an ethics component where I've got to sort of balance that off between the two?
Bingo. I gave a talk with Stephanie Everett on this exact topic, which is Gen AI and how it's going to end the billable hour. And you have to be ready with alternative business models. And we had Jane Reardon and Mark Palmer in the audience they've both been involved with, I think Mark still is, with the Commission on Professionalism for the Illinois Supreme Court. And so ethics is right up their alley. And one of the commentary from it was one of them, I think, in the talk, was we talked about how in order to charge the same amount and make the same amount of money for 10 hours worth of work, that's 10 minutes worth of work. So 10.0 becomes 0.2. You would need to charge $25,000 an hour. And even if it only takes you 2 minutes and the client pays the same amount of money, ethically speaking, charging $25,000 an hour is probably something that's an unreasonable fee. And so you gotta start thinking about, how do I divorce the concept of time value of money? And when you start thinking in this way, and I do it my own way, I don't use it the way Altfee does it, but Altfee is, I think, it won because lawyers, just like you, were like, well, I need some help to figure out, because I've only been billing time, how do I productize and change my fee so I'm still getting value? Well, it becomes the reverse. It's, how do I spend less time on this thing, this legal task, and make more money? And as long as you're providing value to your client in doing so, it's completely ethical. And Altfee is one of these companies that, because there's more of them too, and I've had some of them on my podcast as well, but they help you design this sort of feature. And then using all the other AI tools, you can quickly deliver effective legal advice in less time. And the reason why you make more money the less time you work on something in this world is because you could serve more clients in that time, thereby helping to close the access to justice gap. So I think, just like your focus on resolution is part of that, I think Altfee attorneys that use it can also, even if you're still just as profitable or more profitable, your ability to serve more people increases significantly while being able to spend less time.
But does Altfee, can they only help with lawyer functions that are typically somewhat routine, more of a paperwork processing than, say, a hit and run accident?
So what Altfee does, as far as I know, and since I've had them on the podcast, that was like over a year ago, so they've definitely changed what they do, is they just help you come up with the pricing. So it's still on you to figure out how you're delivering the legal services, right? And I think there are a lot of these tools at Tech Show that are some of them are more practice area specific, but they are just like, okay, here's your practice areas, here's your scope, here's your the type of work that you're going to be doing. Here's about how long these cases last or these projects last. Now they help you just come up with the dollar amounts and how you should charge that to your clients. So they're not necessarily focusing on work product. They're focusing in on how do you decide how much you should charge your client for that work when you're not billing your time. So it's like a focus. It's like a narrow focus on just that.
But how are the bar associations accepting this? Because some bar associations really frown upon flat fees. And this sounds like a flat fee.
Oh, it absolutely is. But I've been helping more and more attorneys and lawyerists. Stephanie, my co-host of the presentation, they help way more lawyers than I do because I'm mostly just practicing law. But the first thing you do when somebody wants to use an alternative fee is you look at the legal ethics, right? And a lot of these jurisdictions do have rules on the books that get often ignored or comments to the rules that talk about acceptability of alternative fees. And they use different language. Some use flat fee, some use fixed fee, some use like the traditional retainer. And in Illinois specifically, our rules changed in July of 2023 to explicitly allow flat fees to be charged and go right into your operating account.
Wow.
You can't make them non-refundable. So they have to refund it if you don't do the work. But you could skip the trust fund account and go right into the operating account. So there's a massive incentive to stop billing hours in Illinois.
I think if we had Carolyn Elephant on, we could talk about getting rid of the trust account. But that might be a conversation for a different day. But let me ask you this, going back to AI specifically and talking about ethics, because I think that was, in my mind, one of the most important bits of the whole conference was talking about the use of AI ethically as an attorney. Now, do you believe or do you have some clause in your engagement letter that says this office use AI?
I don't have it in my engagement agreement, but I do have it in my marketing material.
Okay.
And what I do before I use AI for any client, anything, is I in writing, whether it's in a message platform or my client portal or whatever, text, whatever they prefer to use, I say, hey, is it okay? I'm not able to get to this right away, but I could get you at least a quick answer if you need one by putting it through my AI tool, which I'm using a few, but it's usually Paxton. And I've demoed dozens of these tools. And I think the absolute best results that I've been getting are from Paxton. And I'm putting in similar queries that are non-client specific, anonymized queries into these so that I could compare them side by side. So it is usually Paxton for me. And I have over a series of many times putting through the AI tool for analysis purposes and reviewing the output, because this you actually started to get into this a little bit ago, is I don't think people will be using these tools on their own and getting good results from them, trying to not hire lawyers. It's like, imagine if you wanted to build a treehouse and you're not handy. Well, you could go to Home Depot and you can get all the materials and you can go on YouTube and you could try to build something that resembles a treehouse in your backyard, but it's probably not going to be very good.
Right.
Well, if with AI, the metaphor is with AI, you can make it a mediocre treehouse. It'll still be better than it was without AI, but AI is going to make it better. Well, a lawyer, the expert, can come in and make a beautiful, perfect, sturdy treehouse. We will always be able to provide the superior value using these and leveraging these tools. So like that's how I convey it to my clients, how using this tool improves my ability to give you more work. And they've always consented. I've never had a client that said, no, I don't want you to use AI. Plus these tools that are designed for lawyers to use, not just free ChatGPT, but for Paxton, where they say every single query is a separate instance. The underlying model is not being trained, right? Like their tool built for lawyers, they appreciate the confidential requirements that we have to have with our client data in there. I will still strip out some super confidential client data just in case, because we don't really know. It's kind of a black box, but at least they are advertising that the client information is not being trained on there. And so every time I get my client's consent, and then they get an answer right away, which they love. And then I'll say, I'll be able to put human eyes on this in 2 or 3 days and I'll get back to you. And the human review element becomes even more valuable in a world of AI, because now I'm putting human eyes on this. And I'll tell you the truth, there are some things I probably would have missed that the AI got. Now, there are some things that the AI doesn't get that I'll get, but it still increases the value I'm able to give to my client, in my opinion.
Well, let me ask you this. Does the service sandbox each client's or each user's information, or is it sort of also in the ether? I'm worried about like sometimes the details, or if you accidentally leave the client name in there, or heaven forbid, some sort of PII, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, it is an ever-present concern that I do have as well, Michael. Mm-hmm. And it's one of these things where we're not really going to know for sure because we're just taking their word for it. This company is SOC 2 compliant, and they advertise that they have all the privacy considerations, and they say it's in their own sandbox, in their own separate instance, that it's not training the underlying model. At the end of the day, we're taking their word for it. At least Paxton has raised a Series A where they've raised many millions of dollars. You think mm-hmm. investors doing due diligence would do their due diligence. A little bit is taking some things on faith, but also I'm getting their consent first, mm-hmm. and I'm like explaining this to them. So for lawyers who are just using it, I mean, that's a different story. Like I'm a true solo. I have very personal relationships with every single one of my clients.
Same.
And so it's one of these things where we chat about it and none of that, some of them have asked some questions, but it's us, the lawyers, who are asking the good questions that you just asked, Michael. Our clients have no freaking clue about any of this, right? I mean, a lot of lawyers don't have any clue about it.
I'm thinking of putting a clause into my engagement letters about the use of AI. I mean, right now I've been using it mostly to finesse paragraphs and finesse sentences. I do some analysis of some documents, et cetera, but I'm just kind of cautious right now because I want to embrace this. Don't get me wrong. I am the tech savvy lawyer, but I'm more worried about confidentiality issues and privacy issues than getting the work done quickly. But I think there is definitely a positive, proactive use that can be done with this stuff. What else did you enjoy about the tech show?
This year, I made sure to look out for those emails. And so pro tip for any future attendees of tech show, when you mm-hmm. sign up and you're a lawyer, like they make you check practice areas. And then the vendors, as part of paying to be an exhibitor, they get access to those email lists that you might be a relevant. You get a little bit of spam going into tech show, but pro tip, sometimes they'll have in those spam emails, like things like entries into TV contest things, but also parties and like activities like post show. So my case and Clio, look, I don't use either of those platforms, but their marketing is working because I'm talking about them. I got to go to their, both of them had very swanky parties.
Yep.
And those were a heck of a lot of fun. And there's limited event space. So you have to look out for those advertisements mm-hmm. when they come in mm-hmm. and sign up right away. And they both used Eventbrite. And probably you could go follow Clio and follow my case. And you might be able to get in that way too on Eventbrite. And then that way you get mm-hmm. notified even if you're not getting the spam.
I went to ClioCon this last year for the Tech Savvy Lawyer. And they really put on a very nice, swanky show. And I didn't get a chance to go to the party, the after party. I had to go to work after hanging out at the tech show all day. But I know that in my case, I think last year I went to their after party. I was a tag along, but it was a lot of fun. And they're all good people. And so kind of leading into the law practice management programs, what did you get out of that, seeing all the different ones? How did that either say, maybe I need a new one, or this is why I really like mine?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And by the way, Michael, I hope you're prepared because I got to throw all these questions back at you.
Oh, yeah.
But let me say that even just like finishing my last thought, and then I'll answer the practice management question, because what's nice about going to those parties, if you sign up, is it's a chance, and you don't have to do it at these parties. You could do it. There's other things at tech show or in the hotel lobby where you have these additional conversations with people that maybe you were in a seminar with them or we're talking to the same vendor. So like, it's really important to go to those types of things for that reason.
And don't forget, you also have the opportunity to go to the vendors themselves and talk to real life people who are excited or jumped. They're jazzed because they really want to sell their products, but at the same time, I think they really do believe in their products.
Which brings me back to answering your question about practice management stuff. So mm-hmm. I'm always kind of in the market for what's a better practice management software, because right now I'm using non-legal tech. I'm using HIPAA compliant software, but not legal tech. And it works perfectly fine, and it's way more affordable, right? It costs me annually what it would cost me a month to at a minimum to use some of these other legal tech options. And I still ran into, I really liked some of like what technology they're using these days. In particular, FileVine has come a long way from being a personal injury first practice management platform. Now they've really made it more available for other practice areas, and they have true solo pricing for the first time. I've had a few follow-up conversations with them. But what FileFind doesn't really do for me, though we're going to look into it, is something that really only like Fidu does, which is Fidu Legal. I think they were third place Startup Alley winners last year. And so I'm also still looking at Fidu, is it doesn't do the subscription pricing, because everything is so built around the billable hour. And even some flat fee stuff. And so the reason I'm using the software I'm using primarily, like the first thing, and this is what I tell all the practice management platforms, like these are the three things I need. I need my subscription pricing and the ability for like clients to do self-serve. I want this, I want that, and go in and just buy it, like check out in a cart. None of them offer this except for Fidu, as far as I know. Or I think the Fidu check out in a cart thing is still on the product roadmap, but they're actually developing that. I don't think any of the other ones are. I need secure client portal messaging, because email and text are not encrypted unless you're using an encrypted platform, which has a lot of friction. So I'd rather just be able to do secure messaging and platform. Yep. And the third thing is document sharing within the platform securely, as opposed to emailing documents back and forth, which again, unencrypted, not protected. So like these are the three things that I absolutely need. And some of them, a lot of them do the second two, but even FileVine does an amazing job of integrating text and email right into the client portal. And they even have a cool activity feed. I'm like, this is incredible. But they don't have yet built in portal secure client communications. So like this is one of the things like I really and they're looking into it. They have an internal team communication function, so they're looking at a way to hack the system for me so I can like bring on clients like their team members. But why not make that a feature for me to communicate with my clients? So some client portals allow this. I think Clio does have this feature, but then some of them just don't. And what I want to do one more shout out to a practice management software that I'm kicking myself for missing this feature. They do it every year. It's become their thing. Practice Panther does headshots. And my current headshot that I use for everything is from Practice Panther 3 tech shows ago. And I keep trying to get a better headshot. But whoever their photographer was 3 years ago was just so good.
You should look at your bar association, because the last headshot I had done, which was within the last 6 months, was done free at my bar association. They hire a professional photographer and she did a great job. And she's got her own business, but this helps her obviously earn money and get her name out there. And it was free. And she did a very professional headshot. I had my professional headshot done back in 2019 at my first tech show.
So, Michael, anyway, now you tell me, right? Like, what were some of your big takeaways? What were some vendors on the show floor that stood out to you?
On the vendors floor, quite honestly, I can't say any one. It was nice to compare all the different like law practice management. It was great to see Fujitsu ScanSnap be there. I mean, that's still a mainstay. Who doesn't have their own ScanSnap if you're a solo and small practitioner? There were a ton of SEO people about helping you market your web page and get your media packages together. Shout out to LawQuill and Annette Chody. She's a friend of mine. She's been on the podcast. She and her team really have something going when it comes to SEO and media content creation. She actually has a book, Click Magnet, that really helps kind of identify what it is you need to look at and what you needed to focus on when it comes to your online presence. Again, it's Click Magnet. And quite frankly, my guess is if you contact her, one, feel free to say that I sent you. But two, my guess is she'll probably send you this book for free. Don't quote me on this, but free resource, a good resource. And I would just highly encourage you to reach out to her. If you're not mining your SEO in some way, whether you're doing it on your own or with help others, you're doing yourself a real disservice, because nobody looks at the Yellow Pages anymore. I mean, how many people really look at the ads online William Shatner used to do one. Johnny Cochran used to do one before he passed. They're no longer looking on TV. They're looking online, and they're also doing references. So get your SEO up so that your firm is ideally out there on top of the list when someone says, hey, I'm looking for this type of attorney. But I like being around all the tech and trying to absorb from different providers things that they do that are different, that tell me, hey, maybe I should look at this, or the same that's telling me I'm doing something right. Right now, my law practice management program is really a CRM, similar to like you. I don't use a formal law practice management. I'm using Daylight right now. And I really do like Daylight. because it's built on a Mac, it's for Mac users, it integrates beautifully with my mail and other programs that I use natively on Apple. There have been some growing pains lately with Daylight and the new Mac OS Sonoma, because long story short, the Mac Mail program has sort of locked out integrations with third-party providers. And the little add-ons that you would do, say like Grammarly or perhaps a built-in Dropbox or something, that's been sort of kicked out and you have to integrate a different way. And some of the programs, some of the services are not up to speed. Daylight's one of them. They're working on it. But every now and then I get a little frustrated going, maybe I need to look elsewhere. They just came out with an update and so far so good. So hopefully keep moving in a positive direction because I really want to keep using this program because of the reasons why I stated.
You know, you just reminded me about a really good conversation I had with the folks at Clio, but also with a few of the vendors. So something that I think happens at Tech Show, I think I did this at Filevine too, is they bring their product people to Tech Show. So if there's a, because this is where the tech savvy of us, I mean, not all of us have the title. This is where we go to the show. And so I spent like 10 or 15 minutes just talking to Clio product people about how I need a time blocking solution, like an automated time blocking solution.
Yep.
And like they would ask really good questions about it.
Yep.
And these are, and I talked to the product people at Filevine about the automated billing on subscription. And so like they're really open to that kind of stuff. And I know for a fact that some of the things that I've talked about with like tech, like people at Tech Show before or on my podcast, like they later integrate. Even Altfee, when they were on my podcast over a year ago, we talked about how their pricing, how they were marketing their pricing of their product on their website didn't really make sense. And so we talked about that and I gave a few suggestions and they took them and they won. So I'm just saying maybe, no, their pricing had nothing to do with them winning, but like they really incorporate feedback. And I think that's really important.
And I agree with you that all of the ones out there, whether it's the LPM services that were at Tech Show or some of the other services, they are listening to their clients and their potential clients. So all the more reason why you should be there as a lawyer, because you need to integrate your tech. The headline for my editorial this past week is, if you're not using technology in your law practice and are not going to the ABA Tech Show, you will likely be replaced by those who at least go to the tech show, because that's where you're going to learn stuff and that's where at least you're going to get your footing. So if you're afraid of using tech, you need to figure out a way of ingratiating yourself. And it's kind of like, well, I'm just using WordPerfect. What's wrong with that? And I got news for you. Some people are still using WordPerfect.
Yeah.
And I mean, which just amazes me.
I got a question for you, unless you...
Actually, I have a thought. And then please ask your question. Okay. What we've been talking about, you going on the floor and talking to the different LPMs, as I was doing as well. I want to do a shout out to last year's Startup Alley winner, who was Universal Migrator. Mm-hmm. Apparently, they have the secret sauce when it comes to moving from one LPM to another. And quite frankly, all the more reason why ideally you shouldn't be as hesitant as you might have been from moving from one type of program to another if you're not quite happy with the services you're already paying for.
And they were a huge sponsor of the show this year and had a serious, serious upgrade in the logo, because that logo last year was so generic and bad.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And they are the right product and the right time for the right market. And whether you have, I won't start naming different LPMs, if you have one versus another, I think there's like well over 50 that are maybe 100 now that they could transfer from one to the other. Now, I did look at one LPM that I was thinking of possibly transferring over from Daylight when I was sort of in the height of being a bit irritated. And like, they wouldn't do everything. So first of all, the Universal Migrator doesn't cover Daylight, last I recall. So I looked directly on the LPM itself and they did cover Daylight and the transfer of data over, but you couldn't transfer over your tasks. And I'm like, you can't transfer your tasks. Well, that's how I set my due dates and certain reminders to get things done, filed and whatnot. And if I don't have that, that's going to be way too much lifting on my part to make sure I've got all that covered. And I don't want to have two different programs running at the same time, because then you're paying for two different programs and neither of them are scratching that itch that you need.
When I went solo, I pivoted from mostly litigation to a transactional-only practice. I did not have a database of documents to automate. That's why a business and employment legal document database and automation tool like 650 is super useful. I can rely on the quality of the documents in 650's database since they're putting excellent legal minds to work curating and updating their documents and automations over time. When you're not billing by the hour, outsourcing and efficiency matters, and 650 can help you scale your practice to get high-quality documents drafted in less time. Use the code LAWSUBSCRIBED at 650.com and when being onboarded to get 10% off. If you're not a business and employment attorney or you have your own documents that you'd prefer to use, then my next sponsor, Gavel, is the automation tool for you. Gavel allows you to build shareable, client-facing workflow and document automations. In other words, Gavel helps you create a legal practice where attorneys can monetize the value they bring clients in productized form and scale via subscriptions and flat fees. Use the code LAWSUBSCRIBED at gavel.io to get 10% off an annual subscription. There's no one right way to automate and scale your practice, but with one or both of my sponsors, 650 and Gavel, you can take your subscription law firm to the next level. Links to both in the show notes. Now back to the show. So my question for you, my Podcasting for Lawyers talk went very well, but it also barely scratched the surface. And I think we could use a hardware software focused talk next year's tech show, because mine was just very high level, the why you need to start a podcast, the strategies, the marketing.
And I
would have deep dive.
I would have kicked your butt. I would have said, had I now, full disclosure, you told me not to go because you said I probably know most of those. But I would have kicked your butt because I don't care what it is you can come out with from the podcasting venture. Same thing with AI. Don't tell me this is what you can do with it without showing me how to do it.
But we did a little bit, and In the materials, I would say we covered maybe half the material. So I gave everybody, and I'm going to say on this podcast too, if you want my actual setup, which is not fully complete because I've since improved my setup when I made this, but it's kerbisfirst.com/hashtag studio setup. And it's the same exact materials. It doesn't include the PDF of the deck, but it's the materials that I included for the show. So people could continue to do their own research. But I think there was, you know, that's the sexiest topic when it comes to having a podcast. People want to talk about the software and the hardware. And so I think you and I could definitely tag team that next year. So we'll co-submit, I think. So coming back in, and I'll say that leading into this, I'm going to say one more thing. The two things that are missing from that list. So if you go, this is an exclusive for the Tech Savvy Lawyer.
Yep.
This is an exclusive for the TechSavvyLawyer.page and for the Law Subscribed listeners. And that is, I have since upgraded my setup. And by the way, Michael, this is actually in part thanks to you, because I was listening to you either on a podcast, or it was one of your podcasts. You talked about the Shure MV7.
Yeah.
And how you love it.
Now.
Yeah. And I'm using this now too. But because of my setup, I try to keep it off camera.
Okay.
And there's a setting that you could use if you use the USB connection for that.
Yeah.
And it was okay, but it wasn't great. And so what I did is I did a lot of research, and I actually remembered this tool through my early voiceover days when I was dabbling in voiceover many, many years ago. And it's called a cloud lifter. And it gives you clean 25 dBs for your mic. But what I had to do is I had to get an audio mixer. So I had to upgrade my setup.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, it was very expensive, but I paid for it by getting, I'm an Amazon Prime member. And so for my business, I became a business Prime member and got their credit card and got like $200 or $300 in an Amazon gift card for my business. So I used the gift card money to buy my mixer, which I got an Audient. Hold on, I'll actually pull it up so I could tell the folks. So I got an Audient Audio Interface ID14MK2.
Mm-hmm.
And then I connected it, and I got just 2 3-foot XLR cables, which are super. I just got Amazon Basics XLR cable.
Right.
And so I, because with the audio, with the cloud lifter, you have to plug your audio interface into the cloud lifter and then the cloud lifter into the microphone. And what's so beautiful about the Shure MV7 is it's a both USB and audio interface option. So I never thought I would actually upgrade, but I wanted to give myself the space to do it. And you, when I heard you first say that you had it, and your audio quality sounded so much better, and it was for sale on Black Friday, I was like, oh man, I got to get it. And now it sounds even better with the cloud lifter.
Now, do you know the trick about the foam?
No, do tell.
Okay, so on your Shure MV7, you got the foam that comes with it, the little foam that you cover puffing, the pop filter. So if you get the pop filter that comes with the next version of the mic, if you get that pop filter, which you can buy separately, which is a little bit bigger, apparently it gives you almost the same quality as that next level of mic. So, you could actually hear a difference.
For a much more affordable upgrade than a $200 to $300 audio mixer.
I think I spent $25 on Amazon for it. And the other thing I want to share with you while we're talking about this. So your mic, where is it? I know it's off cam. That part I get, but like, where is it?
So I have it. Part of my presentation mounted to the ceiling.
Yes. Okay.
Using a boom arm. Yeah. Using a shock mount, then connecting the microphone to that shock mount. And I've got the wires back and over so that there's the fewest amount of vibrations as physically possible.
I was going to say, hang it from the ceiling because that's what I do. It gets it off the table, gets it off your desk. It gets sort of the wires out of the way, ideally. Now, wait, I think you had a question.
Oh, yes. So the question is podcasting. We were going to do this recording in person at Tech Show, but we got a little sick. There was a Tech Show cold going around. So first of all, our audio quality is going to be much better that we're home in studio. But I was really looking forward to seeing your what you had brought with you to do an on-site recording or what you did for that. And I just want to hear about how you do on-site recording, because I just hacked together my own way to do it. And I never actually tested it until Tech Show. And I'll talk about what I was doing.
I used my first mic, which is the Blue Yeti, because you can do bi-directional and room directional recording. And quite frankly, here's a $300, $270 mic that I don't want to have to constantly unplug and unscrew and whatever and put it in, because quite frankly, it's going in the luggage. And then, I've got a $99 mic that I could still use. And, it has a nice little box. I put it in the box. I put it in the suitcase. And of course, with all my suitcases, what is the one thing you do when you travel? AirTags.
Oh, yeah.
I've got AirTags for every single piece of luggage so that if something suddenly gets legs and decides to walk off.
Love me some AirTags.
Yeah. And what was the other thing? So
remote recording.
I also have a Yeti snowball that I got as sort of a gift from my stepfather-in-law. He won it at a contest and he's like, I have no use for it. Mike, would you like it? I'm like, sure. So for instance, when I go, my wife and I are going to Panama for 8 days. And I have some intros to kind of get done to catch up on some of my recordings. And I will bring that with me because that'll easily fit in any suitcase and then take care of that. Because I only need a one directional mic and it sounds pretty good. But going back to your question, sort of on a broader scope, last year I did go to the Tech Show, but I went on a press pass versus as now that I'm the ABA law practice division, I figured I needed to pay for that. And they had a room set up for media. And I complained later because the room was right next to the air conditioning unit or something. And it kind of felt like you were in the back room of something. But amazingly, my Blue Yeti did not pick up any of that noise. And it's the episode with Kenton Bryce. And if you listen to it, it sounds pretty good. He and I are sitting across from one another at a table. And it's kind of funny because we both have giggles because we're not used to doing podcast recordings sitting literally in front of a person who's either being interviewed or the interviewer. And so we just had a lot of fun with it. And, that's what I would have done with you, except actually I take that back. What I brought with me, and I don't have them in front of me, are some mobile mics that will plug into your iPhone and connect Bluetooth and will record from two different people. So I was going to clip a mic on you and then clip a mic on me because I just didn't want to carry the Blue Yeti with me for several hours during the afternoon session. So I had basically just a small little box, 6 inches by 4 inches and maybe an inch high and weighed less than, say, 3 pounds. So I just carried that with my laptop instead of dragging a bag around. And that would have been fine, except, of course, as I got sick.
The Blue Yeti was definitely something I used to use for in-person recordings, and I probably would have done it. Except it's super heavy, and actually mine broke. So now it's just, it's an ornament on one of my shelves now. And I'll tell you what, I got the all black one. It makes for a great shelf piece.
sort of like the desk mic on The Tonight Show?
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
We'll get you a pencil.
Yes. That'll have to be for my in-person podcast setup. But yes, so I'm a little sad that my Boohoo, that my Blue Yeti went kerplunk. I've had it since, I think, 2017. You could believe it.
Like, and I think they went for like 130 at the time. And now, yeah, now they're less than 90.
I think I got it to show you how old it is. I think I got it. I got it along with a code for a video game.
Okay.
Because it was like the streamer's mic at the time. And Amazon was like doing it with like one of the Assassin's Creed games, which I had already played at the time. So I didn't even need the code, but it was the best deal on the mic. And so I just took, I think I gave the code to like a friend or my brother or something to use the code. So that's how long ago, some old Assassin's Creed game. But what I did instead for the first time, and what I originally had just for another home setup, mm-hmm, was I got these lavalier mics. They're on that link that I mentioned earlier. It's Powered DeWise professional grade 2 lavalier clip-on mics. Now, it is, unlike yours, it is wired. And so you have to get a USB-C to mic adapter for the iPhone or Android phone to make it work. But it's the wired version of that. And they're super cheap. And you can buy one or you could buy two. And it's a much better deal to buy two. So if you want to do an interview-based show. So you were going to mic me up and I was going to mic us up. And I was going to record right into either my phone or into Descript on my Surface, because I've never really been able to record into Descript because we're recording on Zoom. I'll upload the Zoom video into Descript, but I recorded my Fidu interview like that because I interviewed Fidu while we were there. Audio quality was amazingly good for just some cheap lavalier microphones and Descript studio sound. So is it as good as this? No, but it's like, for on site, I was really pleased with the $40 for two lavalier mics.
Yeah, I need to find time to start recording directly into Descript versus Zoom, because I know there's a way to do it. And
it is. So they acquired a company called Squadcast.
Yes.
And it's very good, but it lacks the integrations that Zoom has with scheduling. So like Zoom integrates with Calendly. It automatically schedules everything, the reminders, the calendars, everything. And so Squadcast doesn't do that. And so you could still like schedule things through Calendly and then in post, go grab a Squadcast link and like add it to the calendar. But like, I don't have time for that, man.
Well, couldn't you create a link for the Squadcast Descript and put that link in your automatic, hey, on Calendly for your, hey, you scheduled this, here is the link that you're going to use.
You might be able, if you're willing to do like the same project for every single recording, you might be able to do that. When I was playing around with it, I didn't like how that saved things in Squadcast. But, but yes, if you're willing to do that, that's probably a way to hack it. And then when you finish recording in Squadcast, it automatically imports it right into Descript. It's like you could find, or it's like it's recording into Descript in a way, kind of a thing. Because that's in the future, this is version 1.0. In the future, they're going to seamlessly integrate that right into Descript.
Well, and then hopefully they can get the calendaring fixed too.
I've been hammering the people at Calendly to make their API a little bit easier to access for smaller companies.
Well, how does it work? How well does Descript work with any other calendaring program?
So, I mean, I'm not using it with, so I'm just doing the Zoom thing. So I'm not I'm not integrating Descript with Calendly or the other programs. I know there's a Zapier Zap that's like a pre-set up Zap, but I tried to do it and it didn't do what I wanted it to do, which was just do it like it does with Zoom. So I probably need to bug Squadcast because it's really on them. Like they need to program to work with Calendly's API less so than Calendly. But yes, I mean, for now, everyone has Zoom. Fewer people have Squadcast. It's just one of those things where could the audio quality be a little bit better? Probably. But you and I on the microphones we're recording and the Descript studio sound, like it's going to sound amazing. So, you know, it's probably okay.
Let's go back to the tech show itself. We talked about AI. We talked about podcasting. But did you attend or get anything out of the how-to sessions? And what I mean, I don't mean for AI and I don't mean for podcasting, but, you know, there were a ton of how to manage your documents from just dealing with a PDF itself to filing to presentations. Did you get anything out of any of those presentations or did you even need them?
So since my practice is so radically different and I'm already really leveraging AI, I didn't attend those, but I'll tell you some of them that I think are super interesting that should actually really scare some lawyers is that there were talks, good talks, on how these legal tech tools can be leveraged by alternative legal service providers to help close that access to justice gap. Well, if we, the lawyers, don't redesign our business model and way we deliver legal services and do it more affordably, then we have a huge opportunity to lose our monopoly on legal services. And maybe that's a good thing, but maybe it's not. And so I think it behooves us to think about other ways that we can deliver legal services effectively, affordably, and at scale, probably make more money, and help close the access to justice gap, reducing the need for alternative legal service providers.
I agree with you on the latter, that we do need to be improving how we're doing our services and whatnot. However, I remember the people who are the ones that create the regulations for lawyers. They're lawyers. And no offense, I don't picture them saying, these other people can do it better, we'll just let them do it, and we don't really need a lawyer to do this anymore.
Arizona, Utah, I mean, they did. They allow non-lawyer ownership of law firms.
But that's different. I think that's more of a financial thing, because even though you can have non-lawyer ownership of law firms, it still comes down to the judgment of the lawyer. So, and that's why I don't think it's going to go away, because, and that was one of the important things I think that came out of the conference, was that if you're going to use AI, fine. If you're going to be using any of these other technological shortcuts, fine. But in the end, it is your name and your signature that you're putting on that document, and it's coming down to you, and you've got to check your work. You've got to make sure that what you're doing and what you're submitting is accurate. And we talked about all those different lawyers who relied on ChatGPT and whatnot to draft and write their briefs, and they didn't bother to check the citations, or quite frankly, my understanding is read the briefs. And it's like, and I think one of the board members was talking about this the other day, and I agree, because this is what I've been touting, is that if you hire a paralegal to help you and they draft whatever, but you just can't submit it without reviewing it or proofing it, because if you do and they're completely just wrong, well, the onus is on you, not the paralegal, not ChatGPT. I don't see a flurry of lawsuits against ChatGPT because it gave poor or bad legal advice. But one, I don't know if you heard the one example, one recent example was one of the airline companies was using ChatGPT to do the client or the customer interaction. And for whatever reason, it said, oh, no, we're going to give you a full refund or something to that effect. And when they wouldn't, because like, well, actually, that's not really the policy. And the customer relied on it, and he sued and he won, because courts are like, that was your representative. This is what your representative said. You're on the hook, whether it's a real person or a chatbot. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the concerns I have about using chatbots that interact with customers, because if it gives out wrong or incorrect information, you could be on the hook. And I know, I think you and others do use chatbot. And I do know that actually Jared Jescott, who also has an immigration law firm, he just doesn't use any chatbot. He has a developer within very strict rules and strict guidelines create a chatbot that interacts with clients and potential clients. And the information is so controlled that all it can do is give, quote unquote, correct information. And I think that's what you do as well.
So I am looking at doing like a chatbot-based subscription benefit, and I definitely talk about it, but I'm not implementing it yet because I'm still looking for the right partner for that. But yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons why I love using Paxton and some of these other tools, is their prompts and their training.
Right.
It restricts not giving information that they don't have answers to, which highlights like the fallacy of these lawyers who are using it and getting in trouble and getting sanctioned for it. And that is, they were treating it like a source of truth. It's not a source of truth, but it can superpower all the other things we do that we do as lawyers. But it's not, you can't go to it like you go to Lexis or Westlaw and ask it questions, because it's not plugged into the case law, unless it is, like Paxton is. But this article is from October of last year. It's amazingly not totally out of date in the speed that AI is moving.
Right.
But I wrote an article for GP Solo. It's in my materials for the other presentation I gave, and it's called, I'm so glad this title got approved. It's a little wordy, but it's called Use Artificial Intelligence Intelligently. Avoid sanctions, ditch the billable hour, and become the lawyer of the future.
Right.
But what I talk about in that article, and I think is still very relevant, is you cannot treat AI like a source of truth. You give it the source of truth. So one of the things Paxton does is you select the case law, or you select the jurisdiction or the multiple jurisdictions before you start to query it or prompt it. Or you upload, now a lot of things are doing this, not just Paxton, but you uploaded a document or multiple documents, and you query against those documents. You could even select the Illinois jurisdiction, here's this document, and you could even query on compliance, does this document complied with all Illinois law, right? Please identify for me any potential hurdles of noncompliance with Illinois law. And it will find some things for you. I mean, and how long is it going to take you to read all of the law and then compare your document against it?
Right.
Now I'm not just going to rely on the answer, but it's going to tag for me and I could go check the citation of here's a law, it says it might violate. Now mm-hmm. I could go to that law. So I don't have to read all the laws. It will point me in the direction and I, the lawyer, have to still do the lawyer work to go now analyze that law and apply it to this document and the clauses or the conditions of this document, right? So like you're still doing legal work. But there is no way I, as a true solo, could ever complete the task of does this document, is it in non-compliance with any Illinois laws? I would never be able to actually do that without the power of AI. And the way that I'm doing that is not relying on it as a source of truth. I'm selecting the jurisdiction, I'm selecting the applicable law, I'm selecting the document, and then I'm following up on the research that needs to be done post-answer by the AI.
Right.
So that is key. That is like, and I didn't hear a lot of that at Tech Show. I heard some of it, but not a lot of it.
Right.
So just as a whole, I think that I'm thrilled to see better pricing options for true solo attorneys. And mm-hmm. no more of this minimum seat stuff that we've seen from these legal tech providers for a long time. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's a minimum of 5 seats. I don't need 5 seats. And so you're charging for 5 seats. Why can't you just charge for 1 seat? And so I'm seeing more of that. I'm seeing more month-to-month pricing from these mm-hmm. vendors. Not all of them. Some of mm-hmm. them still want to lock you into at least a year-long contract. But yep. at least at 1 year is like still better than some of these that used to want to lock you into 3-5 year contracts. So I'm seeing just from like the pricing side of things, which we love talking pricing on Law Subscribed, I'm seeing a lot of improvements with the Tech Show vendors for that. So I'm super thrilled to see that. And I also think this is my guess for next year. My prediction for next year is I think we're going to see a lot less. We use AI in the marketing of these mm-hmm. providers, and we're going to see a lot more like just AI being baked into the products. And it's going to just be more of a, if you don't have AI, like, well, that's table stakes now. So I think even just next year, we're going to see more of that. Not all of that, but I think we'll see more of that next year. That's my prediction. How about you, Mike? What was your takeaway and some of your takeaways, and what's your prediction for next year?
Let's start with my takeaways. I think that I'm going to sort of follow up on what you're talking about with the LPMs and the subscriptions, the seating and whatnot. And I think it is becoming much more user-friendly and solo and small practitioner-friendly. Because not only to piggyback on what you were saying is it's so much easier to transfer data from one law practice management program to another. And there's no longer an issue of ownership. Because back in the day, these LPMs, some of these LPMs were saying, oh, well, we own your data. What do you mean you own my data? You own my client confidential information? You own the work product that I've done? I don't think so. And also, getting these LPMs up and going is a lot easier. Because I could tell you a story of an LPM that I first tried years ago, not daylight. And I had to hire them and pay them extra to create some workflows for me. And mind you, the technology was not there at the time where it could sort of let you do it yourself, but still it was kind of hard to go through. And then even then they couldn't get it going. And it was like, it just turned out to be such a flop that I ended up moving on. And that's where I ended up getting to Daylight through Market Circle, which allows you to create your own workflows and allows you to create your own triggers. What am I predicting in the future? I'm predicting that's going to be a lot more integration of different services into these LPMs, that we see it through Zapier already. And I think it's going to become more baked in. And I'm pretty sure that each LPM will pretty much do the same thing as the other. It just may have a different look to it. Because quite frankly, everyone wants what they want, but they don't want to have to be jumping around from one platform to another. And if platforms don't all have pretty much the same thing, then they're going to lose clients because they're missing that one thing versus what another client has. And I just think that ultimately these services are going to improve, which is going to make the lives of attorneys better, not only in giving better services to their clients, but also in recapturing time to improve their own practice and, of course, to have a life outside of the law.
Well, Michael, I need to round out my side of the pod with a question I like to ask everyone
sure.
who comes on the pod, as is tradition okay. on Law Subscribed.
Okay.
And that is a hot dog a sandwich and why?
Is a hot dog a sandwich and why? The answer to that is no. A hot dog is a piece of meat. Whether you put it into a bun or a piece of bread, that's another story.
Woo-hoo. Now, that's a first. Very good. But it begs the follow-up question of,
please?
Hot dog in a bun, is that a sandwich?
Well, I don't know how it is in Chicago, but being from a native of New York State, a hot dog in a bun is simply a hot dog, not necessarily a sandwich.
Why?
I don't know. Has anyone ever said, would you like a sandwich? Here's a hot dog.
Your reasoning is a question, but we'll accept it.
Well, I think what we should do is the next time you and I record together, we need to get on ChatGPT and ask it, is a hot dog a sandwich, and provide all the various legal citations.
Funny you should say that.
Mm-hmm.
Paxton actually wrote a blog post and used Paxton to answer this question, legally speaking.
Okay. And what did Paxton say?
You'll have to go to the blog post. I don't remember, but it depends on the jurisdiction. In New York, there's actual law on the books of what doesn't qualify for a hot dog for like tax and other regulatory purposes. So like there are, and Texas has its own answer. And like, there are actual that's a legal question in certain jurisdictions. And there is a legal answer. Is a hot dog a sandwich, which is kind of blows my mind.
So like in order for a hot dog to be a hot dog in New York State, does it have to be in that swill of dirty water that you see
maybe,
from the vendors? Not that I'm poo-pooing getting hot dogs from street vendors anywhere. I mean, I've had them myself, but no, I'm gonna have to look that up. Is a hot dog a sandwich? Boy, you know what that would be? That would be a great law school exam.
Right.
Is a hot dog a sandwich? And then you just write it on the board and walk out. You got 2 hours and let everyone else just freak out.
Coming to you soon by Professor Eisenberg himself.
Yes, yes. It's sort of like that philosophy class test where the professor walks into the classroom and he takes a chair, puts it on the table and says, prove the existence of this chair. And then everyone starts writing frantically, except this one guy who basically writes a sentence, turns it in, and walks out the door. And his answer was, what chair?
What chair? Yeah. Again, Michael DJ Eisenberg, tech-savvy lawyer. If anybody wanted to follow up with you, if my listeners wanted to subscribe to the podcast or ask you a question, what's the best way for them to get in touch?
You can find the podcast on the blog at the techsavvylawyer.page, and you can get it from iTunes or anywhere else that you get your podcast feeds. You can also reach me at MichaelDJ at the techsavvylawyer.page. Matthew, where can people find you, please?
So if people want to find me, I highly encourage they go to www.lawsubscribe.com. My back end of that website is now totally powered by Substack, so you can subscribe to the podcast for free there if you just want to get it in your inbox. But I'm also on all the podcasting apps, so feel free to search Law Subscribed. Kerbis, my last name, at lawsubscribe.com. And the only social media I actually use is LinkedIn. So feel free to connect with me on there.
It's funny you say that. So I am on LinkedIn as well. And yes, my podcast is free as well. I do it for the love of the podcast. I don't charge people for listening to it. But Matt, I want to thank you for doing this. It's a lot of fun. I think we do need to do this more.
Michael, thank you again so much for coming on my podcast too, and we will do this again.
I look forward to it, sir, and thank you.
And that's our show. Thanks again to 650 and Gavel for being sponsors. The best way for others to discover this show is for you to share it with somebody you think would find value from it. Follow me on LinkedIn, since that's where I'm most active on social media, and click the bell towards the top right of my profile to get notified about all of my posts about this podcast and everything else I think is valuable for you to see. To get in touch, message me on LinkedIn or email kerbis@lawsubscribed.com. All links are in the show notes. Until next time, this is Matthew Kerbis with Law Subscribed.